Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, How to Prepare Your Resume, Part 1 of 3.
The question this cast answers are, what should be on my resume? What format should I use for my resume? And how long should my resume be?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Boston, we're headed your way. We're hosting an EMC and ECC in Boston September 9th and 10th. 2 days, effective management and communication. If you're in the area or just one hop from Boston Logan, it's an opportunity to learn the next steps to bring a more effective professional, better management, better communication, and meet other professionals in the area. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Mark, thank you for joining me today on Career Tools.
My pleasure.
This is great. Long time since the two of us did a Career Tools podcast together.
Mm-hmm. Although I wrote this original cast 20 years ago, and now we've updated it. So yeah.
Exactly, folks. Today we are re-recording and re-releasing a brushed off, dusted up series of show notes that we originally released back in 2005. We're guessing here that many of our Career Tools listeners haven't been along that or haven't been around that long. I could be wrong. However, for those that are new to our community, this is your opportunity to get this, what we think of as core Career Tools content. And for those of you that have been around this long, you haven't heard this podcast in a while. So we're going to dust it off and do it all again. All right. So today, we're going to talk about preparing your own resume. Now, again, this is a topic we covered back in 2005, and we're re-recording it for today's listeners.
And things have not changed that much.
No, not when it comes to resumes, no.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about resumes, we're not secretly encouraging you. We don't do much in secret around here. We're not secretly encouraging you to leave your current company.
Mm-mm. It's a bad time to do that, in fact.
But your resume is much more than the thing you show to a company that you want to hire you. It's essentially an extension of something called your career management document, which we'll do another podcast about. We have another podcast about that. And so, look, we want you to work on your resume. We want you to have a good resume. But if you're thinking that your resume is something that stays off your desk, you're totally right. A resume is something to be seen. I'm sorry, to be heard in terms of talking about it in a resume, but in an interview, but not seen. You talk about it, but you don't actually show it to anybody at your company, right? Resumes, in terms of your present employer, still have a stigma. If somebody sees your resume on a desk, they're going to assume you're job hunting. And in fact, we'll recommend at the end of this cast that you review it once a quarter, and you do so when everybody else has left the office or when you're home on a weekend, or if you're working virtually, then you could do it at your desk once you've logged off at the end of the day. It's a negative if people see your resume on your desk. It used to be a thing for people to leave their resume on their desk when everybody was at their desk 5 days a week.
As a hint?
As a hint.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, wow, I had a bad meeting with my boss. My resume's on my desk. And it would cause your boss to raise her eyebrows.
As it should.
But the fact is, even if you have a really enlightened boss, they're going to still see that as a negative. They're going to be frustrated by it. So your resume is yours. It's a personal document. It's not a corporate document. And so you shouldn't be saving it on your company hard drive. And you should be working on it alone.
That's exactly it. And folks, we're drawing some distinctions here between what is a personal document versus what is a work document, in part because in the last 40 years, companies have really turned over the responsibility of managing one's own career to employees themselves. And there was a time back before you and I can remember it when organizations took an active part in the long-term career fulfillment of an individual.
Because people went to work for one company. My dad, it was a big deal. My dad was listed on his company's annual report 1 year because he and three other guys had been there 40 years combined. That doesn't happen as much as it used to. It happens far more often than the popular press says it does.
Yep, agreed.
But once companies gave up that career management bit, what happened was for many years there in the 70s and 80s and 90s, individuals didn't realize that their companies weren't managing their careers anymore, and they had to manage them themselves. And in fact, if you ask me on a scale of 1 to 10, to tell you how well even the manager tools community manages their own career. I would say in general, across all professionals, it's probably a 3. And among the manager tools community, it's probably a 5 or a 6, but it needs to be an 8 or a 9. And it's not hard to do, but it certainly starts with your resume and knowing how to do it and knowing how to do it well.
Yeah. Well, and think about that, folks. When the organization is responsible for your career, they at least touch in on your long-term career progression annually. It's the annual review. When the organization was responsible for it, is responsible for it in a way, you could say, they touch in on this at least once a year, probably even quarterly, biannually for some of us. It's not right. Like the organization just said, oh, hey, you're hired, and threw you on cruise control. No. So think of it that way. If you had an organization to manage your career, they would be in contact with that process regularly.
And they're not.
And they're not, exactly. And now you're the one responsible for said process. So you need to be doing that yourself regularly. And what that means is you need a document to capture your career success. And that document is perfect, perfect for the creation of a resume.
Yeah. So if you'll just change your thinking and see your resume as a career history, it's not what gets you jobs, it's what gets you interviews, by the way. If you think of it that way, a career history, you're going to be fine. And keep it off your desk. Do it at home, do it after hours, like I said before, when everybody's gone. And you've got to keep it current. We would say that fully 70% of the resumes we get have errors in them. And the vast majority of the errors are in the most current jobs. And I got to tell you, for people who review resumes, we know what that means. You prepared your resume on short notice. You had the bullets below your, or the paragraphs below your present job already filled out. It's what got you this job, but you didn't have anything on this job. And so you put it together pretty quickly, because when companies are in a rush, they're in a rush and they really need your resume right away. And you don't take time, you don't double check it, you don't ask somebody else to check it. One of the common mistakes, not just full stops and commas and so on, but also missed words, which Word and even Copilot in Microsoft Word will not find a missed word about half the time. So a missed word is not misspelled, it's just not there. So you really have to read carefully. And so if you were prepared on short notice, you're going to get thrown into the no pile because you clearly didn't care enough about the most important career history document you have, the document that's designed to get you an interview. You're not getting interviews. When people tell us, I'm just not getting interviews, the first thing I say is, let me see your resume. And I usually end up saying, well, your resume stinks, dude. In fact, in our original podcast was titled, not how to prepare your resume, but your resume stinks, because we saw so many of them and they were all terrible.
That's exactly it. So folks, if you think about your resume that way, think about it as career maintenance and management. If you think of the tool that way, when you capture things that you would forget 2 years later, if you tried to go back and remember all of those details, and because, let's face it, you can't go back and recreate things 2 years after the fact, especially after you've forgotten them. Now, knowing that it's this live document that you're always adding to it while you still have all of those memories fresh in your mind, you can see it's a very powerful tool and it doesn't create itself. You have to do it. You have to engage with this tool if you want it to pay dividends when you're looking for your next job.
Yeah. And in fact, we'll talk about this more later and touch on the idea of a career management document. But in your present job, every quarter, when you review it for accuracy and for completeness, you'll add 1 or 2 bullets. And in fact, your resume will go over our guidance of 1 page in its draft format. And then when you send it to company A, you'll choose out of the 15 bullets you have in your present job, because you're keeping it current, looking at it every 90 days, you'll be able to cut out 4 or 5 of those bullets that aren't related to this particular job. But for a different job, you'd cut out 4 to 5 other bullets that aren't as right for that job, because you might be pursuing multiple different types of jobs. And the reason you need to do that relative to managing your career and your career management document is we have found over and over and over again that when you need a resume is when you least expect to need one. The opportunities of a lifetime are those things where a target of opportunity shows up. They're the good jobs. Somebody mentions, hey, we're actually hiring. And then you've got to have a resume, but now your resume is a year old and you're going to slapdash something together and it's going to hurt you. And you're going to embarrass the person who recommended you get looked at. And you don't want to be preparing a resume at the last minute.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't know how to pull it together and then you rush something, it's just not going to be as professional as you want it to be. It's not going to look professional, to Mark's earlier point. It's going to have mistakes and errors in the most important job, your most recent, the most important job on the resume, the one that they're going to look at the most, they're going to read with the most amount of depth. That's the one that's going to be imperfect. And the really good jobs are going to be interviewed by or screened by people who really know what good resumes are like. So all that to say, if you want to impress people, you need to have it done in advance.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So here's our outline for our guidance on resumes. First, we're going to cover the basics. Then we're going to talk about contact information. We'll go to the top of the resume. Then we're going to talk about the meat of a resume, which is job history. Every single job has three parts: administrative data, responsibilities, and accomplishments. Then we'll talk about how to capture your education. We'll also have a section about things not to include on your resume, which have proliferated in the last 30 years. And then we'll talk about, as we mentioned before, resume maintenance. So let's start with the basics.
Yeah, let's start with the basics. At the end of this podcast, everybody who is listening is going to know how to have a great resume. When you do the work, it stands out so much that people will talk to you, even if your credentials are not exactly aligned, they're not going to care. They're going to find a way to make it work because your resume is going to scream to them, I'm a professional. It will sing to them, no question. You will stand out from the crowd who, again, in a slapdash kind of way, threw their resume together just to submit it. Yours is going to be that one that stands apart from the others. And that's what we want.
It meets the first criteria, which is it's correct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the basics. First of all, one page. Okay. No matter who you are, folks, we are telling you now, one page, full stop. Not 1 1/4 because you're 45 years old. That second page will not get read. If I see a resume that has a staple with it, I get a physical resume, or it prints out of my printer and it's two pages, I immediately raise an eyebrow. My resume, I'm 65 years old. I've had a 45-year work career. I have a one-page resume. Okay, now there are exceptions. If you're the CEO of a $500 million company, you've been vice president of marketing or vice president of operations of Fortune 500 companies, okay, you can do an executive resume, which is notably longer. But 99% of those of you who are listening right now, one-page resumes, full stop, okay? Anything longer than a page, by definition, must be two pages and must be somebody who's had an extensive career and could only be seen at the very top of very large companies and be an executive. So you don't get 1.5 because you couldn't make everything fit. I've probably spent 30% of my time after I get past the resumes which have errors, Sarah, the resumes that I see when I'm asked to edit them, inevitably, I'm cutting out a half a page. And when I finish and say, if you get rid of all these things and change these things, it'll be one page. They're like, hey, this is better. I said, yeah, it's better. And nobody was going to read the second page anyway.
That's exactly it. If people aren't going to even look at the second page, then folks, putting the words there for no one to read them is completely useless. Why? What a waste of time and paper. You might as well just fit it onto one page.
Yep.
Which takes us to white space is overrated. White space means nothing on a resume. White space is absolutely the antithesis of what you want. And again, talking about your resume, if you look at Mark's resume, any of our resumes, the margins are 0.5 on the left and right and 0.75 at the top and the bottom, and it's jammed.
Yeah, And can I just add something?
Yeah.
Actually, if you do that in Word, Word will tell you, we have to adjust the margins. You can force it, but you can actually go to 0.66 on the bottom. That's the smallest Word will allow you. Otherwise, the common printer might not print last line fully. Yeah.
Yeah. And folks, envision in your mind this piece of paper, words to all the corners, jammed full, 10-point font. You're trying to distill your entire professional career, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, onto one page. We're not saying necessarily to get it onto a single page, use less words. We're just saying capitalize on the space you've got. Use all the page.
Yeah. And we hear this white space thing a lot, that it needs to be visually appealing. No, you're talking about designers and artists and people who want to show interesting and clever resumes. Your resume should not be interesting or clever. It should be dense, and it should show two things. Actually, if you get rid of how to get in contact with you, it should only show essentially two things: what you've done and how well you've done it. And that's it.
Yeah.
Because if I'm looking at 100 resumes, how do you know that I would have the same design sensitivity that you do? The fact is, I don't. And the people who read them in batches, they don't want that. They don't want something super clever. You hear stories every once in a while of people putting a cigarette hole in the middle of it and saying, I'm burning to come to work for your company. Okay, that's cute. But it's not going to get you an interview. Okay.
No.
Maybe if you're a marketing person.
Exactly. I was going to say, if you're a marketing person, if you're a designer, like there are certain jobs where these additional criteria might actually be beneficial. But again, for the vast majority of us, exactly.
It's just text on a page.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I see a lot of resumes which are 2 pages long or a page and a half long, but all of the bullets only go halfway across the left to right margin. I'm like, well, why don't you write more about that bullet and fill up the page that you have rather than just putting more? And frankly, a good bullet, as we'll describe here in a minute, an accomplishment bullet, needs to be clear about what you did and how you did it. And it's not just responsible for something. No, no. In fact, every bullet, as again, we'll talk about in just a minute, every bullet should be an accomplishment. If it's on your resume, it should be an accomplishment that you can develop a 3 to 5 minute accomplishment answer for that. And if you want to know how to answer accomplishment questions, we have podcasts about that. And we also have our interviewing series, which will teach you how to handle interviews and how to turn your resume bullets into accomplishments.
Need help at work right now? Whether you're wondering how to ask for a raise, navigate a tough coworker, or prep for a promotion, there's a new way to get the trusted guidance Manager Tools is known for. Meet the Manager Tools chatbot, AI for work. Powered by our decades of experience and packed with practical answers to real career problems. From productivity hacks to difficult conversations, you'll get clear and tested advice in seconds. Ask anything. How do I ask for a raise? How do I manage my time? How do I deal with my boss? You'll get actionable steps, not fluff. The chatbot comes free as part of the Manager Tools license. You can learn more about accessing the Manager Tools chatbot online at manager-tools.com/memberships.
Okay, next. Please don't pay anybody to help you. Resume preparation services are essentially typing services. By the way, when we hired Wendy, who was responsible for Career Tools for many years, she was thinking about going into a resume preparation service because she was tired. I think she was working at Procter & Gamble or IBM, I can't remember. And she was the smartest person I've ever met about careers. And she said, yeah, I can type up people's resumes. I said, is that really what you want to do? Type somebody else's resumes and spend hours just so they can like how you type? When in fact, in order to truly be good at it, you not only have to be able to type, you have to understand what you're typing about. You can type, obviously. And so spending money on somebody else's typing is a waste of money.
And especially now when you're looking for a job, don't waste money.
Yeah, exactly. We have some friends who do very technical work. A lot of people in our community do technical work. If you have somebody who has a really nice desktop publishing system on their computer, that doesn't mean they know anything about the nuclear power business or about the machine tools business or about designing car parts or any of those sorts of things. And then they mess up the acronyms. Mm-hmm. They do all kinds of stuff. And they're trying to make it look pretty. And they're forgetting that what matters is density and content and context. So no, don't pay for it ever. And once you listen to the podcast, you'll know what you need to do and never will think about having anybody else type it up, particularly if you manage it every 90 days for 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. Which takes me then to font size, 10-point font. And we're talking a standard font. So like choose Bookman or Times New Roman for the font style. A serif font might make it a little bit more readable if you're going with a 10-point font, but 10 is about the right size.
Yeah, I will say this. Most people don't know what sans serif and serif is, so let's be clear. A sans serif font is one without feet on the bottom of the letters. So newspapers generally are written in serif fonts. In other words, they have feet on the letters. It is a much more readable type of font style or type style, okay? If you're doing sans serif, that works really good online, but it doesn't work good on paper.
Okay, so yes, and 10 point, that's the right size. Now, if you're like 23, 24 years old, and you're listening to this, and you may just be, and you started your career, and you want to go with 12-point font because you don't have as much past experience. Exactly. That's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. What we would suggest is you start with 10-point, and then you can see, you can determine whether or not you can make the lettering a little bit bigger, but try and go for a 10-point font in order to see whether or not your resume fits pre-extending it or making it larger.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if you have 12-point, if you're somebody who's got 10 years experience and it's in 12-point, maybe your eyes are bad, so it's easier for you to read it, and it's longer than a page, put it in 10-point, and you'll discover it'll magically shrink to one page in many cases. Next, I've already alluded to this. Please avoid cute marketing techniques. So use white paper, okay? If you really feel the need to use yellow paper for some reason, okay, we're not so rule-driven here that we don't understand there's some personality, but I would never give any extra credit to a differently colored resume. And if I'm reading your resume and I'm 65 years old, if I'm reading it and it's not black on white and you use some cream colored paper and a gray color to your font, it makes it harder to read. People at my age, if more senior people are looking at it, it's like looking at a restaurant menu that has beautiful colors in it and it's tan and light brown as a background. I'm sorry, I can't see those two things. So if you really want to use a different color paper, okay, we're not going to stand in your way, but please don't confuse marketing with the underlying purpose of a resume, which is to get you an interview. And that means it has to be effective. That means it has to be dense. And it's all about what you've done and how well you've done it. Okay? That's all your resume is about, what you've done and how well you've done it. The color of the paper means nothing to us. Your resume, when we're reading it, and we're tired when we're reading it on a Friday night or over the weekend when HR sends us 50 resumes to look at, it's a one-dimensional object, okay? Yeah. We want the person, we want the accomplishments and the responsibilities to jump off the page. The page doesn't need to jump off the page itself because you're cute or it's clever or you have smiley faces on it. Dear gosh, don't include any emojis in your resume. Print it on good quality white paper. Don't try to be cute.
Yep.
You're not that smart. We're not that dumb.
All right. That takes us then to contact information. And this is an area where we tend to give a little bit more leeway. We generally recommend centering your name at the top. That's the first line. Then below it, your address. Then below that, your phone number. Then below that, your email address.
But if you want to save a line, that's four lines, you could put your name and your address, and then put both your phone and your email address
on a single line.
On the single line, that's, you're saving one line. And folks, if your resume is a whole page and 10 lines, send it to me and I can fit it into one page. I'm amazed at the number of people, for instance, who have bullets that have a carriage return in the middle of them, and there's half of a line of text below it to finish the previous bullet. Well, the way people who know resumes look at that is you've wasted half a line.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a way to write that bullet above differently so that you could fit it on one line. You're literally managing line space on a resume. That's part of the reason we want you to go to 10 point. And so if you could put your email address and phone number on one line, you've got one more line for another accomplishment. Your email address or your phone number will not get you an interview, but an accomplishment bullet might.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming that many of you are probably, some of you may be printing your resume, handing it in, giving it to a friend to give to their boss. Many of you are probably going to be emailing your resume as well. Make sure that your email address is hyperlinked. Right. Make sure that it's recognizable as a link that could either be clicked on or if it's printed out, you can clearly tell that is the email address piece of it.
Yep.
If you'd like to add like your personal web page, maybe you have your own blog that you want to put there, you absolutely can. Make sure, though, that they're relevant. Now, and I think back to, again, these designers, graphic designers, you might have a portfolio, you might have things that you want to share. If it's relevant,
there are some exceptions.
By all means, but only if it's relevant. And if you have room at the top to put your name in 12 point, like a little bit larger than the other things, go for it. But again, start at 10 and make it bigger later. You don't want to be running out of room later on.
And I want to go back to the part about a blog or perhaps your portfolio, if you're a designer or something like that. Those are reasonable exceptions to this guidance, but they are exceptionally rare exceptions.
Yeah.
Okay. 99% of you will not have that. If you have a blog about your family life, don't include it. If you have a blog about your work life, but it's just musings and it's not new thinking, it's not analysis, it's not talking about what's happening in the industry. If you're just capturing thoughts here and there, if nobody's reading your blog, and you should be having blog statistics given to you if you have a blog, that's probably an indication that it's not worthy to go on your resume.
Yeah, like I think the example here I'm thinking in my mind, Mark, is you may not have a blog, but you've got social media. Dear listener, that doesn't go there.
No.
You don't include like the link to maybe your link to your LinkedIn. Maybe. But that would be like the only one that goes there. Like not like how do I find you on Twitter?
I can hear people listening right now say, oh, LinkedIn's not for me. I prefer to be on Instagram. Okay, go ahead. And it better be work Instagram. It better be professional Instagram. We don't want to see pictures of you hanging out by the pool. We don't need to see pictures of your kids. We don't need to see pictures of your family. None of that stuff. In fact, there are so many Instagram profiles that are private because they're personal rather than professional.
Absolutely.
And I totally respect that. I totally respect that. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And folks, I'm going to assume that you're going to put a phone number. Most of us have a phone. Make sure that the phone has some sort of answering system, like voicemail.
And the voicemail can't be full.
Yeah, exactly. And the voicemail can't be full, or this mailbox is not yet set up. Like those ones.
Rookie error. Yeah. I want to call you. I'm trying to set up an interview and I get, I'm sorry, this voicemail box hasn't been set up. You are not the CIA.
Yeah.
You're not. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to assume this happens to all of us that because you rarely listen to messages, you rarely update your automated message. The receipt message. So before y'all go sending out your resumes the next time, you got to listen to that thing. It should be a good, what is it called? What would it be called? Like an acceptance, a good answering statement? Something like, hi, this is Sarah. I'm available. Please leave a message.
I'm not available.
I'm not available. Please leave a message. Something like that. Something basic and small. Don't say the date. This is Sarah and it's the 12th of August. Because it's going to go out of date immediately. Just something nice, something standard.
And you should sound friendly and agreeable. I actually had to coach Wendy and Mike on their voicemail messages. I called them and I got, this is Mike, leave a message. Or I got, this is Wendy, leave a message. I'm like, no, I told Wendy, I want it to sound like you're agreeable, like you're friendly. Like
I want to
hear
energy.
Yeah. It's like
smile when you say,
hey, this is Mark. I'm not available. Please leave a message. I'll call you back as soon as I can. Thanks. Okay. You want to project energy in your interviews and every chance you get. One of our laws, one of Horstman's laws when it comes to interviewing is I will take 90% less ability for 10% more positive attitude every day of the week. I have told people to triple the level of their energy in an interview, and they still would not be bouncing up against hitting the upper end of the energy scale that's tolerable in an interview. I have to pull things out of people. And if you make me work to do it, if I get a lackluster, a lifeless voicemail, I'm going to be like, nope, not my person. Particularly in the modern world, where, you know, we're talking about everybody being a leader, and then you leave a message like, hi, this is Mark, please call me back, right? That's not a leader. Now, you might think, oh, that's my authentic self. Well, interviewing and resumes are not about your authentic self. They're about your best self.
Yeah, exactly. And folks, email, the email address you use on your resume, it should be something that you check every
day.
Single day. Same thing with your voicemail. Don't let just people have putting voicemails on your phone that you just leave into the ether and you're not listening to them or answering them. And when it comes to email addresses, something simple, basic, sarahhorstman@gmail.com. Not like, my sister's going to kill me for this one, batbabe@gmail.com, which is cute.
Yeah.
If you like Batman and you grew up in the 90s. But for the rest of us, it's like, not professional, dude.
Yeah. Having babe and a female's email address, bad form. Absolutely bad form. Yeah. And I'm amazed by the people who haven't figured out that if you use Gmail, you can have Gmail notify you when you get an email. Because people tell me all the time, oh, that's my personal email. I don't check it. If you put your personal email on a resume, you want to be checking it every day because that resume is potentially generating opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us, folks. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. Now, help us help others, tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.